And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. We're live here at Patron Platinum Club inside Bridgestone Arena. Tonight, it's the Predators and the Calgary Flames. Final home tilt in the regular season. This is it. And then they're going to close out the regular season on the road in Colorado and Arizona before finding out who their first-round opponent will be. Yes, I said it. They're getting in. Okay, we can. I know it's not official. I know that they still need to capture two more points. Maybe that happens tonight. It's not going to be easy with Calgary. They got a nice win over them a week ago in a shootout, but they're getting in. We can. I feel very, very good about that.
It's all a formality at this point. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. So, should be another fun one. Cue up the another big one at stake. But I don't really know how big it is. I guess it depends on if you're really trying to jockey for position. I know you need to clinch first, but I don't think you can really pick who you want to choose or pick your first round opponent. But I guess we can talk about it. I don't know if they care one way or the other, but. To me, the choice is you take Calgary over Colorado. Neither one is a good choice. We know that, but yeah, that's me.
You got to play. I mean, that's how it is. Like, and you've heard me say this for years. Of, you know, even when they were a higher seed, and it's like, well, you know, they match up better against this team. I don't care. Just get me there, and then let it rip. You know, it doesn't matter. So. Calgary is going to be tough in their way. Colorado is going to be tough in their way. So you're going to have to go on the road. Doesn't matter. Just get in, take care of business tonight against the team that you're likely to play. Take care of business tonight and then keep it moving.
And then see, you're right, what you how you want this to play out.
Yeah, because they're getting – at least you can say that they have a preview. They have a preview tonight of Calgary, and they have a preview Thursday of Colorado.
Yep. I don't know what Colorado – I mean, to me, some would say, oh, well, you know, we're making excuses for Colorado. Well, I just kind of feel like they've put it in cruise control. Doesn't seem like they're that interested in the President's Trophy, and sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. Everybody's got a different vibe or a different, I guess, different feeling on – whether you should go into the playoffs with a certain mindset or if there truly is that proverbial switch that you can flip and turn it back on. There's a lot of coaches that do not believe in that switch.
I don't believe in that switch.
I've seen it work, and I've seen it blow up in their face.
What was it a few years ago that we saw a lot of the national media was saying the Predators look like a team that's just ready to get to the playoffs, that they had kind of turned it off and weren't coasting, but were, you know, you could tell that they just weren't in full gear, and guess what happened? They got beat by Dallas. So,
and weren't the better team in that series.
No, they weren't. No, not at all. So, you know, I don't think you can just flip that switch. I think it turns itself on and has to be there probably starting in late February is typically what you see.
On the way in this morning, drove by the new Geodis Park.
Oh, it's ready.
It's ready. It's ready to go. I mean, I didn't get a really, really close-up view. It's hard to, you know, when you're on Nolensville Road to really, you can just look over there, but it looks good. I've kind of watched it, all the trips through that area, through the fairgrounds, just kind of watching it come together. They're ready to unveil it Sunday.
Yeah.
Against Philadelphia.
It's going to be awesome, and they've been announcing a lot of cool things. Made the announcement today that Derrick Henry and Reese Witherspoon now a part of the ownership group, which, you know, I look at it as, you know, I'll take Derrick Henry's side. You know, it's an investment for him. It's his new hometown investment. But for Nashville SC, I think it's a brilliant move because you have added a yet another well-known name to your ownership group, and you're going to be able to help continue to build the fan base with that. And they already have a great fan base, but it's continuing to get new fans that maybe aren't, you know, as well versed on soccer. I think having Derrick Henry as a part of things is a great way to do that.
They employed over 6,000 people over the course of the construction of Geodis Park, and in their press release, they said 49% of which were women or people of color. So this is important for them. Derrick Henry, we know in this market, you know, I guess he's the fourth NFL player to serve as an owner of an MLS team. I don't know. I'm not sure. Did it say who the other three were?
Well, isn't Ziggy Wolf is a part of the ownership group?
Well, he's the fourth player.
Player.
He's the fourth NFL player to serve as an owner in the for an MLS team. I don't know who the other three were. But it's pretty cool. I don't think we've ever talked to Derrick Henry about, or I've ever heard him talk about. You know, we've talked to Predators players because, you know, if you're from Sweden or what have you, you know, over in Europe, we know soccer is a huge deal over there. And we've talked with Predators players about, you know, how much they love soccer and how much they're going to support Nashville SC. I don't think I've ever heard Derrick Henry, does he even love, I mean, this may be just a cool thing for him to be a part of. I don't know. Does he love soccer?
I don't know.
Does he have a passion for soccer? I don't know. I don't know if I've ever heard him say anything about it.
I haven't either. No, I don't know. So, I mean, this is kind of came out of left field, but it's pretty cool that he did, you know, decided to do that. So, I don't know. I don't know what his level of fandom, I guess.
And Reese Witherspoon, too. I don't know.
Yeah. But, again, getting names like that, you know, even though they're minority owners and they're not going to really have anything to do with the day-to-day operations, it's still cool. I'll use the Music City Grand Prix, the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, for example. They got a lot of big names that are part of that ownership group. They don't do a lot on a daily basis, but, you know, you have Dale Jr. as a part of it. That's going to get attention. So it's a good move, and just helps make that organization even stronger.
So they will indeed open up Geodis Park Sunday when they host Philadelphia. So it'll be the first ever game. 30,000 people. Largest only soccer stadium.
It's going to be awesome.
U.S. So pretty cool. We'll have Chip Carey, by the way, Braves play-by-play man, coming up at the bottom of the hour. Really cool deal that is coming through our market as we speak and will be in the building tonight.
Something you think I'm excited today. About?
A little bit. Just a little bit.
Just a little.
There's some trophy. They got a trophy, right?
Yeah, it's a trophy. It's a pretty big deal.
Pretty big deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a Bridgestone tonight, I guess.
The commissioner's trophy, I believe. It's
4 to 8. Nice. 4 to 8 p.m. tonight.
Nice.
So I think it was at the – it's going to be at the Country Music Hall of Fame, right? We can see that right where we are. From noon until 3, basically across the street, and then it'll be here in the building from 4 to 8 p.m. tonight. We'll be over at Hawkins Field later in the week for Vandy's game against Texas A&M.
This will complete the big four for me of seeing the trophies. I've seen the NBA. I've actually touched that one. I've touched the cup. I've seen the Lombardi at the Combine. I didn't get to touch that one. It was in a case, but I stood next to it. And I said I would wait to see the Commissioner's Trophy, like to be within its presence when the Braves won it again. So here we are.
Here we are. When we come back, Charles Robinson, who's on Robbie and Rexro Tuesdays to start the final hour, is really good. He's really good at what he does, and he's been doing it for a long time. You should check him out Tuesdays at 9 o'clock. Towards the end this morning, I was driving in, and I about drove off the road. I can only imagine what Robbie and Joe's reaction was when he was saying all this, but we'll play the clip when we come back and discuss it, because I don't think it ever even crossed my mind. I think it's laughable for most in this market, but nonetheless – interesting, and something we'll discuss. You'll hear that on the other side. Like I said, Chip Carey at the bottom of the hour as you listen to Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Seltzerland is turning Nashville into a hard seltzer paradise. That'll be this Saturday at Riverside Golf Links. It's going to be a really cool experience. They're going to have over 100 unique hard seltzers, plus tons of seltzer swag, plus just a lot of if you're into that, if you're into the hard seltzer brands, I know that is the thing.
It's
a lot of people
off.
Are. Yeah, it has exploded, that market. So this is a good thing to go hang out. Go to thegamenashville.com/contest to enter for your chance to win tickets to Seltzerland. Remember, that's this Saturday at Riverside Golf Links. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe here at Patron Platinum Club. Willie D will join us a little bit later. David Poyle also in the second hour as well. Predators hosting the Flames tonight. But about an hour and 15 minutes ago, was actually when he made this statement, it was about an hour ago on these airwaves. Charles Robinson was talking to Robbie and Rex Road, and it came up about Ryan Tannehill and not being here last week. And here's what Charles had to say.
We're in an era where, you know, I think a lot of teams, a lot of, you know, fans are seeing – they're seeing the types of quarterbacks they're getting these deals, and they're sitting there going, well, you know, our guy is not, you know, an elite player. He's not, you know, he's not on that level. So that's not something that we necessarily have to work, you know, to worry about. But the fact of the matter is, if you have a good quarterback that you would consider like in the top 15, remember, we were just talking about, you know, him getting screwed out of the Pro Bowl, okay? I mean, and I know for some people, they're all, you know, prisoners of the now, and they're like, hey, man, that wasn't, you know, that's not now. But you have to think in terms of length and money. And so people are just going to sit, and they're going to look at his salary, and they're going to say, well, hey, 2022, I mean, this is a guy with a base that's basically $30 million, $30 million a year, $29 million a year. But you have to look at the years, too. Okay, I think he's got to be 34, I'm guessing, 33, yep. 34, right? Okay, well, realistically, you know, if he stays healthy, I mean, he's going to play another 5 years, probably. Okay, well, he's sitting there and he's looking at his deal and he's saying, well, the way it's structured, I'm totally cuttable after 2022. So there's really not a lot of security there. And if we're going to do this and we're going to stay together, let's get the new deal done so that instead of me being cuttable after 2022, I'm really probably cuttable after 2024. Like, give me 3 years of security. That's how fans have to look at it. Not just the base money. It's also the security of years. And the fact is he does not have that. They could walk from him after 2022. And if you're Ryan Tannehill, you're probably sitting there going, hey, I would like to end my career here. Let's do the deal to make sure that's what happens.
Now, I heavily endorse Charles Robinson on yep. the morning show. I think he is must-listen to radio every Tuesday. I was concerned that I was going to wreck my car that I love on 24, and we don't need any more wrecks on 24.
Yes,
there's enough wrecks on 24 coming in, and I was nervous that I was going to wreck my car listening to this because I'm sure a lot of people had the same reaction of, look, I know Charles doesn't live here, but there's no way that's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
There's no way that's going to happen this offseason.
I mean, I get
Could
why.
Could you imagine if John Robinson came out and said, just wanted to get with everybody and announce we've extended Ryan Tannehill's contract 3 more years? I mean,
Not extend A.J. Brown?
That's a big no. Like, I understand Ryan Tannehill's, like, the way he, you know, placed it on Ryan Tannehill's side of things, of course. I mean, that, sure. I mean, we've talked about it. This is why Derek Mason, I said this, I think, yesterday and even last week, that I agree with D-Mason. I don't know about the whole Super Bowl or bust, but Derek has been Super Bowl or bust, and they're if that doesn't happen, then they're moving on from Ryan Tannehill, and I do think this is it. I think this is the last season. I think it's going to be extremely difficult unless he just comes out and does what Derek said. That's a pretty high standard for anybody. Aaron Rodgers, yeah. Patrick Mahomes, who can really live up to that? I don't believe it's that. I just think this thing is probably, you know how we've all had this happen, you know, it doesn't fill in the blank, the situation. We've all been in a situation, whether it's a relationship, business, personal, or whatever, that is just at the, you know it's coming to an end, right? Or it's at the point of no return. And I'm not saying it's not at the point of no return, because he's going to be their quarterback this year, but
and what's behind him?
And that's another thing.
Yeah.
Does that get addressed this weekend? But I just think unless he comes out and has an Aaron Rodgers, hey, Green Bay management, your number one season, and he does that to everybody here who's been banging on him, and he comes out and has, hey, everybody who's been banging on me, your number one season, and throws like 40 touchdowns and three picks for 4,800 yards. I don't know how you fix this. I don't know how this is long term. I don't know how he finishes out his career in his NFL career in Nashville.
I don't see it happening. They're not going to extend him this year. That's crazy talk to think that's going to happen. But several things. Number one, there's nothing behind him right now. Okay, so you know I've used the Alex Smith. We've used the Alex Smith comparison.
Yeah.
And it feels very much like Alex Smith, you know, whether it's in San Francisco or in Kansas City, where, all right, had some good years, got you about as far as you can go, but you're going to move on. But the difference there is you knew what you were moving on to. You knew you were moving on to Kaepernick. You knew you were moving on to Mahomes. You don't know what you're moving on to here. Now, I've heard you say that if Cleveland were to release Baker Mayfield, which they're going to eventually, mm-hmm. you sign Baker Mayfield to be the backup. I like that idea. I still think that's in play. But my question to you is, do we think that the big reason that Tannehill's not here right now, that maybe this contract talk is being thrown out there because somebody has told him, hey, they're probably taking a quarterback. Just so, whether it's John Robinson or somebody within the organization, hey, just so you know, we're probably going to take a quarterback. Do you think that conversation has happened?
I don't know. It's a great question. I don't know. I don't know how much.
Because we know some teams do that, some teams don't.
Most teams don't.
Right.
It's not like most teams do not have, for all everybody who thinks that, you know, the general manager brings in, you know, or the coach brings in, like, does it happen? Has it happened? Yes, it has. But most of the time, the organization isn't calling you up to say, hey, just wanted to get your thoughts. We're thinking about drafting someone.
Who you are.
At your position, or we're thinking about signing someone at your position. Look, don't worry. Don't look into this too much. Those conversations really don't happen.
It depends on who you are. If this was Floyd and Steve McNair, Floyd's probably having that conversation with Steve. Like, hey, just so you know, we're going to look at, you know, drafting somebody for the future. But
we don't know that because they never did it.
They never know. He got caught working out at the facility, and Bud had him shipped home. But the way that it was all, I always understood it was they were going to draft Vince, and Vince was going to back up Steve for a year. And,
well,
you know,
yeah, but, I'm not so. I mean, look, I've heard all the stories, and
sure,
there seems to be one reoccurring theme. There was only one person that was on board. Really on board with drafting Vince Young.
Yeah.
And it's the one that matters the most.
And I heard John McClain tell that story. VY is my guy. Could you say that again so I can print it?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, this is obviously a very weird offseason for Ryan Tannehill. And he's gone from being the hero with this team of taking over from Mariota, taking them to the AFC Championship, winning divisions, to being the GOAT because he threw – 3 interceptions in the playoff game and the loss to the Bengals. But to sit here and to think that, yeah, there's going to be a contract extension because he wants to finish his career here is crazy. But you also got to figure out what's behind him and what you're going to do. Because if they go into next offseason and what Charles has said and a lot of others have said is true, that this is the end of the line and they're going to move on, I mean, are you really comfortable going to Logan Woodside?
I think we know the answer to that. I mean, I can't imagine that they really feel that Logan Woodside is the future. I suspect that there'll be either a draft pick or a signing later on this offseason.
And I don't want to live in a world where they're basically being what they have done a lot since McNair. Granted, they did draft Locker, they drafted Mariota, both of those didn't work. But they've lived off trades or free agency, just like you've seen the Colts do the last 4 years of this revolving door at quarterback because of trades. I don't want to see them do that. You know, they need to, if they truly believe that there's somebody in this draft that they can build around and they can develop, then do it. Whether it's the first round, the third round, whatever. I mean, then go ahead and do it. But if you don't, then you have to understand that, okay, you're probably going to be stuck with Tannehill unless you just want to tank, and because that's what's going to happen if you move on. I mean, at least with Tannehill, you kind of know what you are.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything behind him not being. I don't know. I mean, Ryan Tannehill just kind of seems to be in his own little world, and that's fine. I mean, everybody chooses to do it in different ways. He's certainly not A.J. Brown. You didn't get to weigh in on yesterday when CBS put out the report during our show about A.J. Brown working out with Jalen Hurts over the weekend.
No big deal. I don't read anything into that. You have players that from other teams that work out together all the time.
Right, but they're also not in the same situation as A.J. Brown.
I understand. And it's going to get, you know, antenna's going to go up and people are going to freak out about it. I don't think it's a big deal. I just think they're working out. I read zero.
So you don't think A.J. Brown at all was one of – you don't think he wanted that out there? You don't think he was sending a message at all?
No. I don't think he's that calculated. I just think right now the thing that he does is he deletes tweets. That's his game. But I read it as a workout.
Well, it is hard to say he's calculated if he has been deleting tweets.
Yeah, I mean, I think he needs to listen to Derek and let his agent handle things. But at the same time, I really think yesterday was just a workout. I get why people are talking about it, but I think it's just a workout.
Yeah, I don't know. Been a lot of stuff
going on. Two SEC West guys just hanging out.
Yeah, as I said yesterday, everybody who wants to just keep sloughing this stuff off, and that's, you're entitled to your opinion. Every time you do, there's a new story. It's like, they're starting to stack up.
And there's going to keep being stories until J-Rob walks to the podium and says, hey, we've extended A.J. Brown.
Yeah, well, A.J. Brown's not the first that's wanted a new deal, and everybody acts that way.
No, I know. I mean, this stuff happened with CJ. This stuff has happened with...
But CJ held out.
CJ did hold out.
And Luan held out.
And it affected CJ.
Yeah.
Holding out.
It did. All right, we'll come back. Chip Carey, World Series trophy in town. We'll be in this building here this evening. It'll be over at the Country Music Hall of Fame during the lunchtime hour starting at noon. We'll talk to their play-by-play voice. We'll do that on the other side. DDC, ESPN, 102.5, the game. And they can prove it tonight. Trophy's here in Nashville. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. We're live here at Patron Platinum Club inside Bridgestone Arena. We can see the Country Music Hall of Fame. That trophy will be there starting at noon today, and then it'll make its way across the street here into the building where we are right now when the Predators host the Flames tonight. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And now we're now joined by the play-by-play voice of the Braves. Chip Carey is on the line. Chip, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. I've told this story before. There was a group of us that went over July 4th weekend last year to the Braves-Marlins series. Had a blast. Beautiful weather. We had some 10-year-old boys play baseball. Our team was there. We got to go on the field afterwards, and they got to run the bases. It was a great, great experience. And the Braves looked really good. It was a nice comeback win. And about a week later, Acuna goes down, and I remember going, well, that'll do it for Atlanta. I mean, that's no coming back from this. And then the next thing you know, they go on and win the World Series. That's what we love about sports, right?
Well, yeah, I quote the great Joaquin Andujar, you can sum up baseball in two words: you never know. So, last year, I think all of us felt the same way. it was a team that didn't gain traction until August. Yeah, you lose one of the best players in the game, not only one of the best players on your team, but one of the faces of our sport. You think, uh-oh, maybe it's just not our year. But somehow, some way, Brian Snitker was able to hold this all together. Alex Anthopoulos should have gone to Vegas because every move he made at the deadline worked out, obviously. And the team got hot at the right time and ran the table in the playoffs. So, yeah, it was an unlikely World Series win. It was certainly enjoyable. I don't think anybody expected it, and I think that's what makes the 2021 season so special for so many of us, because it just came out of nowhere. And the baseball gods tapped the Braves on the shoulder and said, it's your turn. And I think we're all very, very happy that that was the case.
Yeah, and we experienced it in 2017 where it came out of nowhere. The Predators were the last team in to get into the playoffs. And then the next thing you know, they're on this magical run to the Stanley Cup final. We've talked about this many times over the years, kind of getting that feeling like, hey, you know, like when we would, you know, remember this series or this game or this moment where it was like, oh my gosh, they're going to win this. Did you kind of experience that, like, where as the journey kept going through the playoffs, you're like, holy cow, maybe something magical is happening here?
Well, you mentioned the 4th of July series. I think the Marlins were here when Max Fried got that pinch hit and the Braves were out of players. You know,
yep.
They just found a way to stay relevant, right? They didn't get buried, and the rest of the division did not take care of business and live to regret that. For me, personally, the moment that reinforced the belief that this team was going to do something special or had a chance to was when Freddie Freeman hit the homer off Josh Hader in the playoffs. Their best guy against our best guy at the time, and Freddie took him deep, and the Preds went nuts. And you use the Predators as an example. You guys know in hockey, you get a strong defense and a hot goaltender, you can beat anybody. And I think that was the moment where the Braves finally realized, you know what, maybe we are a team of destiny. Let's go out and do it and play loose and have fun. And they did that. And so in a season that was filled with a lot of forgettable moments, for me, that was the most unforgettable, because in my mind, that's where I said, you know what, this team's got a chance. So they did that. They carried that momentum into the Dodgers. It was L.A. that made the base running mistakes in the NLCS, and the Braves took advantage, sort of a role reversal from what we saw the previous year in 2020. And then, of course, you get to the World Series, and Soler gets hot. He didn't even play in the first two series, I think, because of COVID. And he comes out of nowhere and just starts launching balls out of ballparks everywhere. And it was the Braves that got the parade and the trophy. So, but for me, it was Freddie Freeman's homer against Hader. Lefty, packed house, game on the line, and he came through, and the Braves never stopped winning.
We're talking to Chip Carey, the voice of the Atlanta Braves for Bally Sports. And you know, obviously the offseason was tough for Braves fans as Freddie Freeman moves on to L.A., but I think my biggest question is not replacing his bat and his position, because they did that with Matt Olson, who's a heck of a ball player, but it's that leadership in the locker room that, you know, he was like Chipper, that you knew who was in charge, you knew who was calling the shots, and now that void is obviously there. Who in your mind can fill that? Or is it by committee right now with some of the veterans that have been there for a while?
I think it's going to be committee. But and again, I'm not in the room, so I predicate whatever my answer is. I'm not one of the players. I'm not in the locker room. I'm around the team. If you were to ask me who I thought would be a great candidate to do that, for me, it's Ozzie Albies. This guy plays so hard. He's got this bright, engaging smile. I mean, he plays with such joy and such passion. He has fun with Ron Washington. Their relationship is worth the price of admission alone. I really believe that Ozzie Albies is one of the most underappreciated and highlighted superstars in our game, and we're so fortunate that he's here. But to your point, you know, when Chipper left, you wondered who's gonna fill that void. Well, it turned out to be Jason Hayward and Freddie Freeman to start. And when Freddie Freeman goes, I mean, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Bobby Cox, John Schultz, they're not there anymore. And the nature of our game is changed. And I think as time goes on, guys develop those leadership roles because they establish elder statesman status. And you've got a lot of guys on this team that have been here a while now. And while they're still young players, they're now experienced players. Dansby Swanson's a guy that's not afraid to speak up. Ozzie Albies, as I said, Acuna, when he comes back, is going to be, as you know, very vocal and very loud and very demonstrative. So I don't think this is a team that's going to suffer from a lack of leadership. I think this is a team that's going to, and I don't want to use the word suffer, I think this is a team that's going to work through and find out what its identity is without Freddie Freeman, and that's the natural course of events that a team goes through. The Mets are doing it without Jacob DeGrom. The Cardinals will do it when Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright leave. The Cubs have gone through it without Bryant and Rizzo. That's the nature of the game. You have to expect the change, and hopefully you have enough strong personalities in your locker room and in your front office to help guide some of these younger players through that. I'm very confident the Braves have that.
We talked about adversity and the injuries that they faced last year, and they're already doing that, losing Eddie Rosario. Looks like 8 to 12 weeks that he's going to be out, and he was obviously a huge part of that run to the World Series last year, but how big of a void is that one that they're going to have to fill?
Yeah, it's a big one. This is a very right-handed team, and Eddie, when he's right, is a dangerous left-handed hitter, as we saw that. I think it'll be interesting to see what the Braves do to fill that position. Let's face it, the outfield defense has not been good. They've got to figure that out. Their hitting with runners in scoring position has not been real good. They were 1-for-14 in their last game, which was a one-run loss to the Marlins. They haven't won a series yet. I mean, not a lot has gone right. But as Brian Snicker has said, there's too much talent in that room to worry about it. The Braves have the exact same record this year that they had last year. Now, I'm not saying that history is going to repeat itself. They've got to play better. They have to start winning some series, and they need to get on a roll. And when Ronald Acuna comes back, that's going to help. The bullpen has to settle down. Starters have to throw strikes. But we're still early. We're barely a tenth of the way into the season, and I think the best days are ahead for the Braves. They have not played to the peak potential that this club has for any meaningful stretch yet, but again, with the Cubs coming in town, a rebuilding team, if they can take care of business here at home, they can maybe go away with a winning road trip, set up a series with Texas, and then the four big ones with the Mets to start the month of May, and then we'll see where we are after that first matchup with the team that's looking really, really good in New York this year.
Does May 6th still seem right for Ronald, according to reports?
That's what they say, but I wouldn't rule anything out. They've got a roster spot to fill with Eddie Rosario. What they do with that, I think, is interesting. I don't know what the candidates are. Drew Waters is hurt. Michael Harris is a double-A, tearing it up. Could Acuna come back earlier? I guess anything's possible, but they have to be very cautious with that. I would like to see the Braves somehow find a guy that can play center field, give Adam Duvall a bit of a breather. I don't know that Adam's going to be able to play 150 games in center. That's just my opinion. There are plenty of options, but what they do and all that stuff. Look, Alex Anthopoulos is a great guy. He's a terrific people person, but he should work for the NSA because you could torture this guy and he's not going to tell you what his move is until he makes it. So, we'll find out when the rest of everybody else does and then evaluate what the move is. But, certainly something's going to happen with Eddie going down, and that's a shame because Atlanta was really counting on him to be a big left-handed part of this offense.
I'm curious of your thoughts on this one, Chip, because we know Nashville's Braves country. I grew up in Nashville, grew up a Braves fan. The trophy is here for that very reason. Mm-hmm. But we've had a lot of discussions lately about, if baseball were to expand, this market would obviously be a prime candidate for it. Dave Stewart is a part of a group trying to bring a team here in Nashville. But for somebody that, is in Atlanta and knows how important Nashville is to the Braves, what are kind of your thoughts if that were to happen in the near future?
Well, I mean, look, I'm not privy to those conversations, and I have to be careful. But look, any city that has a great population and is a great baseball center, I'm all for. I think growing and expanding the game is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But you do have to respect territorial rights. And when you look at what's happened in Washington with the Orioles and the Nationals and their TV disputes, that's a big, giant mess. The A's have not been allowed to move to San Jose, which would have really helped their franchise. So all of those things taken together makes it very, very difficult. There aren't a lot of cities that are prime territories that don't interfere with potential existing markets. And look, these are big businesses and the like. Those interests have to be protected. If you want to go based on geography and based on population, New York could handle a third team. What are the odds of the Mets and the Yankees letting that happen? Zero. So, look, I love Nashville. I think it's a great city. Charlotte's on that list, I'm sure. Montreal is another one. Las Vegas. Somebody's got to go to Vegas, and there has to be another team out west to help with travel out there. So I think baseball is going to expand at some point. When that is, that's way out of my pay range and way outside the range of my crystal ball. But I love the fact that there are interested cities and growing markets and places where our game is still thought of passionately and have fervent fan bases. And whether it's Nashville or somewhere else, I'm sure baseball is going to do its best to find the best place to put a team if indeed that happens.
Last thing, Chip, on the way out. It's interesting, Truist Park, it's a beautiful ballpark, the setting, where the location, what's been built up, the battery around it, you know, the Omni right there in the outfield. And now a lot of people are using that as the example of that's what everybody's trying to accomplish with their stadiums. Because I remember the initial talks of, you know, people were like, really? They're leaving it? Why? Why do they need it? And then you see this and you've experienced this and it's like, oh, now all this makes a ton of sense. Are you, what is it like for you to kind of see, you know, just think about before it was ever built and now that you've experienced it for these years, could you have ever imagined it looking and feeling like it does, where it is truly now the place that people use as examples of that's what we should do?
Yeah, I think we all could envision that. Look, Turner Field was a great place, but there was nothing around the ballpark. And let's face it, the city of Atlanta had 50 years to develop that area, not only with Turner Field, but with Fulton County Stadium. There was nothing around it. It was a gridlock to get in and out of the stadium. It was a very difficult place. Beautiful places, don't misunderstand, but the economic growth that was needed to happen didn't, for whatever reason. Yeah, the battery, we could all dream about it. When the World Series was going on, they had 100,000 people out there while we were doing the postgame show going crazy. It was awesome.
I was one of them.
Right, exactly. And so I think what's happening is baseball's finally understood, and something I've talked about for decades, is the Disneyfication of baseball. People come to the game not just for the game. They want an experience. They want an immersive day. If you're going to come and park and spend $30 to park, you want to be able to enjoy the day, not just sit in a parking lot for 2 hours getting in and 2 hours getting out after you leave in the seventh inning. And that's what the battery allows fans to have. It is a destination place. There are great restaurants. There's shopping, the hotel. You can sit on the green and watch the game on the big screen. If you have a ticket, you can come into the game. And a family can truly come out and enjoy the day, not just the 3 hours of a baseball game. So, yes, I think this is a model that a lot of other franchises are going to try to follow. They've done it in Texas. St. Louis was kind of the first one to try it, but the economic downturn slowed down their ballpark village. But it's smart. It's good business. The money that's generated outside the stadium is money that can go directly into the revenue streams of the team that doesn't have to be shared. And, you know, obviously when you have a really good team and you have 35, 40,000 people a night, those revenue streams help pay off ballparks, debt bonds, and allow you to go out and get good players like the Braves did this year. So those revenue streams are going to keep the Braves competitive for a long, long period of time. It's a great model. It's a fantastic facility. And it truly is a pleasure to go to work there every day because it is a beautiful place. And I'm so glad to hear the reviews from the good folks in Nashville who love to come down and watch us play too.
No doubt about it, Chip. Appreciate the visit as always. Keep up the good work. We'll talk to you down the road.
Look forward to it, guys. All the best. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there's Chip Carey, Braves play-by-play man. Of course, the trophy, World Series trophy in our town. Be in this building where we are tonight when the Predators host the Calgary Flames. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of the DDC. We'll do that next. We appreciate Chip Carey for joining us. Nashville's best deal of the week is...
Penne Pazza. I probably said it wrong. I hope not.
No, I think you did. Penne Pazza.
Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to say it that way, but it's a lot more fun. It's in West Nashville. Penne Pazza is Nashville's best and most authentic Italian restaurant, serving fresh farm to table dishes. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals right now to get a half off $30 gift card from Penne Pazza while supplies last. Sounds like a good place. Haven't been there, but sounds.
I've heard really good
things.
It's
on your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to try it. It sounds really good.
So we had Dave Stewart on the show on Friday, and we didn't really have a whole lot of time to talk about, discuss, digest, because it was towards the end of the show. It was in the final hour. My takeaways were, it seems like everybody I've talked to, it seems like a foregone conclusion. One, the A's are forcing their way out.
Yeah, they're going to be in Vegas.
They're tanking, and it feels like the movie Major League. It really does. Except for they're not going to Florida. They're going to Vegas.
Yeah. I would say
they had an announced attendance last week of 3,700, and apparently there weren't 700 people there at the game.
Yeah.
They've gutted the team. They're just trying to force their way out. That's what it feels like. And the people that I've talked to said it seems like they're headed to Vegas.
Well,
it seems like in the go ahead.
Well, I was going to say in Vegas is there could be more examples, but they are, in my opinion, the one city that can go, oh, you want to move here? Stadium done. Got you. There you go. Taken care
of. In Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just that's what you've seen.
Yes.
You know, Golden. What? Oh, the NHL has come here? Done. T-Mobile Arena. There it is.
And they already had arenas. And they're like, no, we'll build
you
a brand new
one. And guess
what
they're going to do, I would say, within 5 years? They're going to build another arena for the NBA team that's going to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're going to have everything mm-hmm. by the time it's done.
Yeah. And we've been predicting that ever since the Golden Knights started.
Yep.
We've been saying it the whole time. Like, this is the beginning of them becoming all professional sports will go there.
And let me tell you this. I've now been in both of those buildings. They do it right. They know what they're doing. T-Mobile, very, very nice. Allegiant, obviously very, very nice. Credit card machines need to work better, but, you know, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. You did have a problem with that. So I believe this situation is – Major League Baseball is going to expand. I'm surprised it hasn't happened because of the 2 years of COVID and all the lost revenue. The quickest way to get lost revenue back if you're an ownership group and for a league is to expand. Right, it's what the NHL did. I mean, they lost revenue, and they added the Seattle Kraken, and they had to pay almost $1 billion to join the league. What was it, $750 million?
Yeah.
To join the league. So there you go. You don't have to do anything other than to say, I'm an owner. Where's my cut?
Right.
That's all you have to do. I believe Major League Baseball is going to do the same thing. I think they're going to add two expansion teams. Like I said, I'm surprised it hasn't happened. It's the quickest path to get money back because it's going to cost, Dave Stewart said, over $1 billion.
Yep.
Right? What was his number? Did he say
it was kind of confusing how he said it because I think he said the total cost would be probably in the
about
$2 billion or
four billion.
Because you build in the stadium and
franchise fee.
Yeah. So there's all that stuff. My thing on this is okay, so I agree. They're gonna expand. I mean, they're going to add two teams. I would assume one in each league. If you're Nashville, you need to push for the American League. Like, you need to be in the American League because you do have to recognize that even though you're jumping into things, it would make sense to me to do American League and do an interleague series against the Braves. That would just make the most sense to me. Every year you play the Braves, you can have that natural geographical rivalry between them, but you're going to draw the Red Sox, you're going to draw the Yankees, you know, you'll draw some heavy hitters that will help you in the early days to grow your team. That's why ultimately I don't think an expansion team's coming here. I think if this city lands baseball, it's going to be the Rays.
Yeah, but you heard Dave Stewart in that interview say, you know, not ruling out, I'm not saying we're not interested, but I'm saying we're not interested in being a part of somebody else's group.
Right, but they may not have a choice.
The way I took the interview is, yeah, we wouldn't rule out, you know, if Tampa came here. But he was saying to us, we want our own team.
Sure.
We want to be the primary owner. We want to be the ownership group. And we don't want to join forces with somebody else.
They have what their whole thing is based on, that, you know, they're trying to honor the Negro Leagues, which I think is awesome, and be the Stars, and that's what they're founded on. But if baseball basically says, you know what, we want to go to Montreal, we want to go back to Montreal, and we want to go to Charlotte, then because we think the Rays are going to move to Nashville. And then we get everything. Then what do you do? I mean, because right now I would say the Rays moving here is a distinct possibility. It's just getting the stadium. Now that's the other part. That's where you can give this group somewhat of an advantage, because if they're willing to privately fund the stadium, that's obviously going to sit well with the city. The city's going to be like, cool, we'll find you some land over there somewhere.
Said they're in talks with the folks at TSU.
Right.
So.
Right. So, I mean, that's what they would, you know, certainly have to do. I don't know. I still think it's a long way off. We got to get a new football stadium. That's the problem. It keeps getting pushed
back.
Well,
but it can't be a long way off if, you know, if Major League Baseball in 2 years comes out and says we're expanding, they have to tell you where they're expanding. So
sure, but
it's you got to be ready to strike or you or you're going to miss the boat and you're out.
Well, there's an ownership group that's ready to strike. Is the city? That's the question. Is the city ready to strike? Because right now the city's like, well, we're opening a new soccer stadium we just paid for. We just granted it's minor league. We just built a minor league stadium less than 10 years ago. Now we're going to build a new football stadium. You know, and even though it's privately funded, like, the city's got to obviously have a say in it. So if they're not ready to strike, then you got nowhere to go.
There has been a bet on the Titans. David Poyle is going to join us at 11:15, but someone has placed a bet on the Titans concerning the draft. We'll tell you what we're talking about to begin the second hour of the DDC. That's next.